And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare your independence in wherever the hell we are. We're in somewhere south of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We're in Iowa. Well, Donna figured it out. All right, what we're gonna do is we're gonna be taking a Onawa, Iowa, on our way to Rendu, Kansas, where we've got, you know, a bunch of these buses. You know, in a scrap yard. It's really organized and cool, and guy's been doing it. He's 78, and he's been doing it for freaking ever. And he had a lot of equipment when we first were rebuilding, and we're going to spend a couple days there just kind of aligning panels and making purdy and little knob this and a little molding that and a bumper thing there and just kind of get it all purdied up because it's so purdy. So we're going to spend some time doing that, and then we're on our way to New England. And lots of stuff going on. Now, what we're going to do today, in the second hour, Dr. Colleen Huber is a referral from Dr. Frank Tembury. That's going to be in the first hour. He's sitting there right now. Aren't you there? Are you on time, Frank? Say it. Say you're there. Hit your mute thing. Turn your mute off. Make sure we know you're really, 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 really there. Are you really there? He's not really there.
Here and... A.M. for me, Arizona time to Ernie Hancock is way too early, but I had some coffee, so it should be okay.
He's there. It says that you're muted. Oh, there it goes. Okay, now I can probably hear you. All right, so Dr. Frank will be with him in just a second, but do me a favor, introduce the people to who we're going to be talking to in the next hour, Colleen, because I read her, Donna read her bio and everything to me. That seems interesting, and you guys, like, started a doctor group there and not being too communist in Arizona. Introduce her a little bit.
Sure, yeah. It's kind of a real honor. I didn't realize I'd be for her because of the timing today. Dr. Huber, I shouldn't say this, but she was one of my medical students way back in the day. That's how long I've been teaching. But she's an established doctor for like decades now at this point. She focuses on cancer. First thing is about her is that I'm not trying to make this an advertisement for her per se, but I get patients from all over the world to my office about prostate cancer. And one of the things that happens
recording in progress
when they say,
all right, you back, Frank?
Yeah, I'm here. There we are. Something about you recording it and then it dropped it. Okay. So Dr. Huber, what happens is when I have patients that come in to see my, to my office about prostate cancer and they're trying to say, okay, I have a serious problem. Who should I deal with? You know, if it's possibly metastatic cancer, more advanced cancer that goes beyond after I assess them. Again, this is not about me advertising here. What happens is I usually give them two different options, two extreme options, okay? Because there's all sorts of doctors, especially here in Arizona, that are world-class because we have one of the best medical schools in the country here. And I give them two different names. And the reason is because some patients prefer a naturopathic doctor that is more establishment, you know, someone that interfaces with the hospital system, someone that maybe still takes insurance. And there's one doctor, I'm not going to mention his name, who's a really big name, who is sort of like that. Someone when you kind of are still part of the medical system and you want evidence-based and, you know, probably doctors that wear masks in hospitals and all that kind of stuff, you know, for COVID. There's a doctor that does that. It makes them feel more comfortable. But the problem is they're limited in what they can give you, because all they're going to do is, you know, the four or five natural treatments that that have been proven at least to a certain level of efficacy. And
you're working
with MDs, which means linking to the there.
Yeah, go ahead. During the break, we're going to switch to another network. But go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, the doctor. But then I tell patients in physician, there's an option, which is to have a naturopath really doesn't the establishment who's basically going to work for you and say, look, you know, if there's some kind of treatment over Germany or this or that or whatever that would that option out there, I want to be creative. This is your life. You get one shot. Forget what the system is. Let's just figure something out. And that's what naturopaths have used to be and traditionally have been. But many naturopaths today are afraid to really do something creative because of all the regulations in one of your industries out there. Well, Dr. Huber is one of those latter doctors. She's one of those that actually just stands up for patients' rights and for the profession. I'm very honored to even know it with it. But about 15 years ago now, myself, actually, and another doctor, Dr. Ken Profrock, who's an exceptionally famous doctor. He's more famous than all of us around here. And he wears black and has a beard and a ponytail. You have no idea. The guy's brilliant. Anyway, the three of us came together and talked about patient rights and talked about, well, what kind of, you know, how can naturopaths draw the line to allow for experimental and new options? Because if all we do is do evidence-based and do treatments that the MDs approve of and then get rid of everything that they have not approved of, then we're just getting rid of and sloughing off what makes us unique. And maybe natural treatments don't always work for everything. That's not the issue. The issue is the choice, the medical options to try something new. That is what's being lost in our profession and many, many areas in alternative medicine. Like I said, it's not alternative medicine just to have herbs and acupuncture. That's not what we do. It's to give medical options and choice and empowerment to patients, which is being lost from the system. So the three of us created this group called NORI about 15 years ago. I've been busy with life, and so I'm not really part of it much anymore, although in spirit. Dr. Huber is taking this whole thing on.
Ah, he's breaking up.
And she's been bored some time. I'm proud to know her. In any case, she will be your guest. Can imagine that not only are we having, does she push back for patients' rights, it comes to the coaching team that's been exceptional to for not just patients, but amongst naturopaths ourselves. You know, with naturopaths that are being told that, God forbid, you mentioned hydroxychloroquine, they're going to ban you and censor you. You guys have heard me rant on this with the past year. Well, Dr. Huber's taken that on as well, has written a few books on the topic that are evidence-based, and I'm sure she's going to create waves in our own profession. The irony is that my own profession was always questioning vaccines for decades until COVID. Then all of a sudden, very doctors that always think vaccines because they came from the evil business pharmaceutical companies, now all of a sudden when the Democrat Party that most of them are part of say now you should take a vaccine, it hasn't even been tested, they also jump right in line and drink the Kool-Aid, which has been astounding to watch. But Dr. Huber has been consistent. And one last point, she has, not to get too political, she can speak for herself, but let's just say she's not been a Ron Paul libertarian most of her life in that world. But yet, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter about the politics, she's been consistent, at least when it comes to medical options and choice. And that's something that's said I said admirable.
So she has experience going into break. She has experience with the system, character to challenge it, been doing it, kind of like you described her as the Dr. Mikovits of Arizona.
From the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condense oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will, so pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Dr. Frankenberry is on the Tyranny Report. Okay, we got tyrannized over here this next week. You know, have we this last week? Stuff you want to share? I got to tell you this, Frank. Yes. Ed Vallejo calls me last night, and he goes, well, I got a visit from the FBI, okay? Now, Frank Vallejo was, he kind of took over and was in charge of the meetup for Ron Paul during the 08 campaign, and probably 12, too. I mean, he was the guy, man. He's like, you know, everybody, we're going to go make signs or something. And he's very loud and very vociferous and very, very Ernie. But he's he has a full beard and a long, you know, got his waist ponytail, you know, a braided tail, and he was in the Army at one time, but you know, he's just a, you know, activist, just a guy. But he had some land up in Winslow area, I think he got, and he's, you know, preparing, and he's over at Adam Kokesh's, helping work on his land up there. They're friends, and he was up there helping him. And all of a sudden, the FBI shows up, go to Adam, hey, what's up? Now, we're looking for Edward Vallejo. Are you Edward Vallejo? And they show a picture, and he's like, I don't think that's me, you know? And you know him. He goes, Ed! Ed comes out, what's up? And he goes, oh, is this a custodial conversation? Am I under arrest? No? Okay. Turns around, walks off, all right? They go, wait. We have a warrant for your phone. So he, all right, cool. Here, take it. Here's the phone, password, whatever, peace be upon thee. You know, he didn't resist anything, didn't care. I'm like, why? And he goes, because I was in Washington on January 6th. Did you go into the buildings or anything? Nope. But they want to get some Ed Vallejo phone. And I'm going, really? Well, he just sent me pictures of the warrant, and I just got them this morning, and I'm going to put them up, and we'll IPFS them and make them available for everybody and forever and always, and everybody gets to see actually what they're doing, what these warrants look like, looking for phones of people that went to Washington on January 6th. So wow. There's that.
That's incredible. And he wasn't in the building. He was standing out in the street. He was just at the main area. He didn't even follow those people. Heck, and then he was in the hotel. I think most of the time he was in the hotel. Remember his car got messed up and he had to.
Oh yeah, he lost his car. That's right. He parked it. He couldn't find it.
He was in the hotel the whole time. He wasn't even there. He was in the hotel room watching the whole thing from the hotel room. Remember?
Yeah, he reported from there. Didn't we record a show? Were you on the show? Yeah, we were talking to him. You know, he was there telling us what was up and looking out from the hotel room what was going on.
The hotel window. Oh, my God.
Man, they're going for it. There's something. I don't know. There's internment camps. Man, there's re-education camp stuff coming. You know, so this is getting, I never considered, I mean, like I consider any of these guys president or my president or any of that crap, but Biden-Harris, man, that's not even, that. I remember somebody said one time, 80% of government jobs could be done by robots. And then Greg Tivenin sends me an email and he goes, 100% of government jobs could be done by pictures of robots. And I'm thinking that we're looking at pictures of robots. You know, we just have Biden Harris. It's just like an image. It's like a cartoon that's, you know, we're just got to wait till the episode ends or something. I'm what do you think's going on?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it's kind of one of the themes I was going to mention because, you know, there hasn't been one specific thing. I mean, so many things are happening. And as we all know, it's happening quicker and quicker. And look, this sounds like hyperbole, and I'm not trying to be this way. We can just see this thing breaking down on all sides. Everything from the breakdown that's going on with China. It looks like we're preparing for war with China. I mean, the war drums are astounding. I mean, just beating. I haven't heard that before. It's like we're just full on preparing for that. We've got the breakdown in the confidence with politicians. I mean, that's breaking down even amongst Democrats themselves. The financial system, of course. It's speeding up. That's kind of what happens. You know, I was amazed, and many of us were surprised how many, mainstream people were saying, oh, you know, the economy, we might have some issues in a couple of years. A couple of years, we're sitting back thinking, how's this thing going to last until Thanksgiving or the end of the summer? And those concerns, I think, are panning out. I mean, things are happening quicker and quicker where I think we're going to see some major movements in the stock market and the crypto market. You know, I think I'm throwing a lot out there, but you know, the crypto market, I think, really can be crashing. And the crypto market, if and when it does crash, in my opinion, I think that very well could be the catalyst worldwide to really just sink the entire, you know, to be the trigger for the depression 2.0, just as the retail investing market of the brand new retail stock market investment in the 1920s, when that finally popped, that sunk, you know, the entire market at that point. The thing is, crypto is even bigger, and with retail investors who don't really understand what all this is, or is throwing money in speculation. And it's worldwide. It's not just the American stock market. It's a worldwide market. So I think that might be the trigger, and so many components of the crypto world that, you know, with Tether, that might be entire scam coin and beyond belief, which is tethering also not just to the dollar, but to every other crypto. And there's a major concerns with Tether. So there's so many things with that. And then the breakdown with Harris to bring that up, and with Biden, even the Democrats are kind of realizing that they're kind of, I mean, she's just cackling away going, oh, I have to be at the border. I mean, even Democrats are looking at this and saying, what? Like, they're starting to realize the buyer's remorse doesn't quite cut it of what they have in the office right now. And just the breakdown of everyone's just shunning the entire system, which in many ways is what you have been calling for all along. Oh, and one last point, just this morning, now you've got the retail investor revolt with AMC and the meme stocks, and they're now talking about what's his name, regarding the T0. Now they're bringing up the whole issue of T1 and T2 versus T0 trading. Yeah, Patrick Byrne, and how the naked shorting is happening, and now it's the naked shorting still being exposed right now. That's still going on, although it's supposed to be illegal since 2008. And so now the underbelly of the entire system and the corruption of so many levels is coming out from all sides. I know I just threw a whole lot in the air there, but it's happening quicker. And then the Bill Gates issue, you know, with obviously with Epstein, and you know, the supposed that didn't happen; it was a conspiracy theory. And now all of a sudden, Bill Gates, his reputation might be forever tarnished, almost like Fatty Arbuckle. And if anyone out there knows that reference, good for you. So I'm just saying, it's someone who was famous and then all of a sudden forever is tarnished. Not that we care about Bill Gates' reputation per se, but it's to be someone that rich and famous in history, to be tied to Epstein, and so many other things will come out from that, because that will go up hopefully to discovery. We're going to learn more about the Epstein. Then we have the CNN case with CNN, which lost 75% of their viewers. And now you've got, what's his name? My brain might go or really doing CNN right now.
We're going into break. We'll be right back. Dr. Frank Camper, we'll get into it when we come back. Just a minute.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Cambridge. This is the tyranny report. Let's look at, I got it printed out here. Okay. Ed Vallejo, Motorola Moto black cell phone with such and such phone number. Gimme. You got a gimme. It's a warrant of you got a gimme. Warrant by telephone or other reliable electronic means. Any authorized law enforcement officer, an application of blah, 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 blah. They wanted his phone. And I go, how did they even know you were there? Well, I had a phone. Okay, that's how it works. Oh, man, this is just getting weirder all the time. All right, so...
I'm just curious, you know, how they had the time to find Ed when I'm sure they're also so busy collecting the phones of all the activists in Seattle and Portland and all the rioters that keep going on for Antifa. I mean, I'm sure they're collecting their phones. You know, I don't know how they found the time to find Ed, who was just stuck in a hotel room the whole time. That's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah, I'm glad the FBI...
No. They don't have to track them. They got them all on the surveillance because they gave them their phone. They're taking a phone. It's an Obama phone. You know, we're reusing them. You know, this is, I'm wondering at what point, I mean, I know you and your family are kind of, you know, you're having other alternative arrangements of we got and going and doing something else. And Don and I are too. We talked a lot. Oh, okay. Finally. Yesterday or day before, I had a guy named Dan Schultz on. And he's in Northern California. He lives in a little canyon thing. He 13 years that he's been building this great thing. And he's got only like 5 people up there. They're ready to open it up for like another 20 that they can, you know, sustain. Because they got like 3 football fields worth of food, man. I mean, they are just, you know, killing it. So, you know, he's an IT guy. And he, you know, 20 minutes away into some kind of city and out of his canyon, he goes to office. But, what they've done is they had Airbnbs. They had over 1,000 reservations last year. People just want to go up there and experience their thing. Well, he's like, you know, we can turn this into a business. Well, he has a document of I'm Lord God King Bufu, and we can have nonviolent communication, have meetings and everything, and everybody get along, and we'll decide as a collective or whatever. But I got, you know, King's Privy Council of veto power if it's my land. Okay, I just want you to know that. Well, the way he set up the agreement is like, I don't know, a dozen pages, but it is the mechanism for having a intentional community, you know, where and how you would do it. And I've been screaming about this for years and going to all these, you know, speaking at different events and everybody's talking about community, we got to have intentional community. I go, yeah, what do I got to do? What can I do? What's your conflict resolution? Well, finally, this guy has known James Corbett for years, had him on a show or something, and I go, you've had this all this time? And so James and I did a show last night, and I go, look, what the hell, man? He goes, hey, get off my ass, man. I just found out about his hippie commune thing just a couple weeks ago, so I forwarded it to you. I go, okay, I'll let you slide here. Don't tell me you've been sandbagging. You had this all this time while I've been bitching, you know? And so he listens. This guy listens to the show. He's been a regular listener of Declare Your Independence and me and Corbett and Corbett's show and everything. So it finally, I have a template. It was on, I think, Tuesday's show. And it was a really good conversation. And now we got a document, you know, that somebody has been doing this for a long time of how you deal with temporary workers, who gets invited, who gets uninvited, how they're expelled from the island kind of thing. So finally, I got something for us in the future.
Well, great job.
Well, it's a start, you know, but at least, yes, you know, somebody's thinking, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. I just wanted to mention a couple of the quick things. Before the last break, I mentioned it was Alan Dershowitz who's suing CNN. I was talking about just the breakdown of so many things. And CNN just lost like 75% of their viewers again just since last quarter. I mean, we've never seen a tanking in a network ever. And the killing blow might be Dershowitz, not just for CNN, but media at large. Remember that Nick Sandman case? Remember the kid that the Native American guy with the beaten drum? And, you know, anyway, so he sued CNN, and they took the money to settle because CNN does not want this thing essentially going to discovery. Because if this goes to discovery, then, of course, then they get to, you know, interviews everyone and see how far up to the top this censorship goes. So they just settled out. And, of course, this young 18-year-old is set for life. Well, Alan Dershowitz probably doesn't need the money that bad. And he's suing them. And he's not going to settle, it sounds like. He's going all the way and forcing them. Because now the judge just ruled in his favor. So the case can go to discovery or settle. He probably won't settle. He's going to go to discovery. And this might be a landmark case to finally expose to I mean, not to this audience, but to the majority of people, just how corrupted this system is from the media. And that's CNN. Plus, it will set a precedent for going after every other media when they blatantly lie and edit. I mean, if you even call them.
No, a lot of people support it. They want somebody being corrupt on their side if we don't like Trump or something. They don't care.
No. Oh, I definitely get it, but I'm talking about for the moderates.
Yeah,
the average
no,
American
I'm still.
So anyways, that's all good stuff. It's happening, and then also there was one of the main spokespeople for Trump, and I forget actually his name. I haven't seen him too often. He was on Newsmax. He gave like the first official update on the new Trump multimedia thing, whether you care or not, Ernie, because you got your own thing going. But it sounds like that Trump. His team has a full social media platform that's not just a ripoff of Facebook or Twitter. It's sort of like something special. Brandon, I know it's Trump. It's a Trump speaking. You know, it's like, oh, it's something special. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be amazing. But I think that they are working on a platform that's going to be unified in all areas. According to their numbers, 60% of Republicans are going to follow Trump to another media. At least that's the polling that they have. So we're talking multiple millions of people. All leaving their possibly, or at least adding on a social a network that I think will be fun and also unified. Because right now there's so many
unified as in what surveilled as all categorized and put in. We see you. We see
you. I don't know. Well, I mean, I don't know about to that degree any different than any other conservative site that they're going to hack anyway. What I'm talking about though is. Right now, there's Facebook, and then everybody else, you know, tries to find a conservative network. But there's so many of them, and if your friends all don't join you on that one, then you miss most of your friends, and therefore people just stay on Facebook because not enough people are switching to the same alternative site. But if everyone sort of agrees that the Trump site is where most people are going to go, then I think it could get some traction to really be an alternative to them. Second of all, there's a great site I won't sponsor right now or plug, but I'll tell you sometime later. This guy, he's like this multimillionaire who left Facebook. Yeah, he was working for Facebook for like $1 million a year, and he quit. And he does videos now just exposing the whole system of not just Facebook, but currency and cryptocurrency. I sent you a couple of videos on him. But anyway, he did a great video talking about about Apple's new iOS 15 is coming out. And it's going to be massive. It's going to be a full-on battle cry against Facebook. Not that this audience cares, but Apple is going to take down Facebook with a social media platform rivaling Facebook on steroids because it's native to the infrastructure. And it turns out they've been battling Facebook. Well, anyway, Facebook, if you have Facebook stock, if anyone's stupid enough to have it right now, you probably want to sell it. He just dumped all of his. Granted, I'm not giving you investment advice. That's just what this guy did. He sold all of his. All right, I should put that disclaimer in there because I don't own it myself. But I'm just saying that he used to work for Facebook and he just dumped all of his because he sees how strong iOS is and what Apple's going to do. So and once Apple is successful with their native, then Google's probably like the G phones. They're going to wind up taking the same approach and copying theirs. So it looks like, strangely enough, Facebook's days are numbered. Steve Zuckerberg is in panic mode apparently with trying to get his Facebook.
Yeah, but he knows how to throw a spear. I saw it.
I saw it. Yeah.
He did some weird post of him. Yeah, well, I got skill, and he throws a spear and shoots a bow and arrow, and there's some weird stuff going on. These guys are not right in the head. You know, they're. We'll be right back.
Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The Crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary, I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The Crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The Crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the Crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find. Back.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Ba-rum.
To break free from your lies, you're so self-satisfied.
Covering the secrets and exposing the lies. And having Dr. Frank help me do it. All right. So, Dr. Frank, you know, we got another segment here. And are you going to stay on a little bit with the doctor? You got to go.
Well, believe it or not, I have to play doctor. I have a patient consult I had to move today, so I'll be doing that at the top of the hour. So I have to get going. I just wanted to finish that point, though, that as far as with Facebook being under attack, which not that I care. I mean, as far as they can go to hell. But that major network is about to be taken on by the main, you know, by Google and Apple architecture. So they're going to get nailed. And as Facebook dissolves out, they've already lost the young people. It's just the old people that are on there. And a lot of the old people are conservative or just looking for another home to go to. And so as Facebook starts to devolve very quickly after this new update of iOS comes out very soon, then the Trump network is supposed to come out this summer, and it's supposed to be a full architecture itself. They're putting a lot of time into it, not to be all funny about Trump, but he tends to like quality stuff and some surprises and make it fun. And he supposedly he's going through a lot of interviews. Early on, he was going through all sorts of different plans and making decisions on what he wants this thing to do and what opportunities and obviously have this thing up in time for the 2022 election.
Is he emphasizing privacy a lot? Is that what he's doing? Is he saying, yeah?
We shall see. My main thing is where it's going to be hosted. I mean, the thing is, I mean, he was president of the United States. Imagine if his social network platform is hosted in Scandinavia or somewhere. I mean, talk about what that would represent. The U.S. president has to have his company offshore because of the censorship and draconian rules. So anyway, there's many shifts happening. And of course, when the economy goes, which, again, I started the show off with, this audience already can see and feel it, and we don't even talk economics much on the show. You know, Tim Pachot, and I'm sure your other guests who talk about it. We know it's coming down on us now. So that's breaking apart. And one last quick one. I threw a lot of stuff at you for this hour because normally we have like 2 hours to ramble off air, but today we don't. But Hollywood, not that we care about celebrities much, but we do talk about culture here. Hollywood Reporter came out with a really big article. Now, no one – I don't care about them. They suck a bunch of Marxists, but – They basically set the marching orders for Hollywood. So the Hollywood, everyone, the entire system sits back and they argue, debate, whatever. But the Hollywood Reporter is sort of like their marching orders about what Hollywood expects them to do and what the party line is. It's always been defend China, defend China. I mean, the NBA, defend China. I mean, that's the last 10 years. You know, and if you make a Star Wars movie, put some random Chinese actor in there with a lightsaber nunchuck or something, and sit there and placate to the audience. And of course, the Chinese can read through this crap, and they hate it. They hate SJW stuff. But regardless, this has gotten to a breaking point with John Cena. Not to get too much into it, but he's the guy from Fast and the Furious, and the newest Fast and the Furious movie came out, and John Cena, who speaks a Mandarin. He actually made in an interview, and he talked about how Taiwan was its own country. He made some little subtle comment, and the China government said, you know, that they went ape crap over it. And John Cena, this tough guy, had to sit there and do what seemed like a hostage video and placate and apologize in Mandarin. By the way, very perfect Mandarin. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say that. Oh, please, I'm humbling. Ask for your forgiveness. And he did this embarrassing interview. Or whatever, hostage video, and still the Chinese audience tanked the movie. It lost like 80% of its money. And after that tanking of Fast and the Furious, the Hollywood Reporter came out with this really in detail, like about face, saying how China's a problem and China is blah blah blah, and basically we're not going to stand up to China anymore. So now, and this is a huge deal to start ending the show today, or at least our segment. It's about the constant the culture war, but for Hollywood, probably for money reasons at this point, they're realizing bowing down to China is backfiring so many ways. Kathleen Kennedy of Disney is getting fired. All of this stuff that we've been talking about, they're all breaking down because no one wants it, and the companies are losing so much money right now. And the John Cena Hollywood versus China event, I think is a landmark situation where now this article is decoupling from China. And then at the same time, we're seeing the war drums about China, about the military switching over their gear from desert warfare to Pacific island warfare.
Okay, to be clear on this, Hollywood Reporter, they're saying they're starting to break. Are they saying, we need to kind of decouple from China a little bit? Or they're supportive of it, or what?
Yeah, it's exactly what they're saying. It's an involved article. And I'll send you the link with some more information on it. But it's involved. Basically, it's incredible. It's like an about face, just saying, for the first time that placating China is not necessarily the way to go in so many words. That's kind of what they're getting to. And all the stuff that we've talked about on the show, how China has manipulated Hollywood, they have not admitted. They've sat back and said, "Who, me? We haven't done it." Like they're pretending none of this happened until now. And this article, now they go through like talking points, talking about all the things that we've talked about on the show that they themselves ignored. They were part of it. And that's the astounding thing. They turn around and they act like they're the ones that discovered it.
Well,
right?
Senna, for a lot of people know, he was a wrestler or...
MMA, I think.
Yeah, MMA, a cage fighter or something like that. And he's a good actor. He's fun. I like him. He does a good job in a lot of different things. And it was... interesting. I did see that he apologized for, somehow in an interview he said something about the country of Taiwan. I don't know if that was offhand or he was making a point or whatever. But anyway, it pissed off China. And I guess it became a viral something there that he said. Anyway, so he had to go on and apologize. And I go, he apologized, whatever. And I just blew it off. But, I knew it would be a thing there. And I did not anticipate that it finally would be a breaking. It would be a lot better if he didn't go all LeBron James and kind of suck up to China so much. But the issue at least is getting out there. But so he speaks Mandarin. Was that like a practice thing, or he actually speaks it?
No, he speaks it. I was shocked. I speak Japanese. I spoke a little Chinese. My daughter, I'm trying to teach Chinese. And it's very, very difficult with the vowels. But I can tell he's been doing this for a long time. He was not reading cue cards. I'm just curious how he learned Mandarin. To be honest, it was pretty good. But but even still, the way he did it though, it was embarrassing. I mean, but keep in mind, Fast and the Furious is one of the only money makers. It's, believe it or not, as much as none of us really watch those movies, it's one of the greatest money maker movie franchises of all time. It rivals close to Star Wars, believe it or not, all nine of these movies, whatever the crap. But therefore, when they're selling themselves out to make a movie that they expect to make automatic, like close to $1 billion, these Fast and Furious movies make almost $1 billion each, which is crazy. But when Star Wars collapses, which was a guaranteed moneymaker because they kept selling themselves short, selling out. Now, of course, they're making massive changes of stars. I mean, ultimately, the free market wins out. And Fast and the Furious, I think, was just such a dumb movie. They had a built-in audience, and then they lost the whole Chinese audience they placated to. And now the American audience is turning on it because they're like, look, John Cena is basically a cock.
Now, if they wanted to tank in China, the CCP makes it tank in China. Your credit score, your social credit score goes down. It's not allowed to be in the theaters. You got to release dates of not now. And you do it. So to think that the Chinese people themselves don't like it, how the hell do you know?
Well, the thing is, in order to sell movies or to review movies in China, you have to be a partner with China. So yeah. Hollywood can't just make all the profits. They have to give up like 50% of the profits. And China keeps changing the deal like Darth Vader with Boba Fett. That's what they keep doing. And Disney's got a problem because they make the majority of their money, the Disney Corporation, apparently a lot of the profits, are their theme parks. Well, they have, I think, 5 or 6 theme parks in the world. 2 of them are in China.
Really?
And so they're concerned that China is just going to take them over. If we go to war to China, they're just going to take over the theme parks. So that's another reason that Disney is just – at what point did they cut their losses? So this is like, I'm telling you, we're about
why
to
why do they trust these guys? This is what happened. Charles Goyette in his The Dollar Meltdown was printed in Chinese, Korean, and all kinds of stuff. And he got a deal with China to where they paid him an advance, and then he was supposed to get some kind of royalty. Never got any of the royalty. He was happy he even got an advance. You know, he made sure he got a good advance before they went into China, because he wasn't going to get any more. So I don't trust these sons of bitches. You know, I don't trust any of these guys on any side of nothing. I trust the ground producing food if I keep their freaking chemtrails off it or something. So that's what we're focusing on, is just making sure you thrive and survive.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare your independence in wherever the hell we are. We're in somewhere south of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We're in Iowa. Well, Donald figured it out. All right, what we're gonna do is we're gonna be taking a Onawa, Iowa. Starting Monday next week, we're going to the new format. No more commercials. We're going to get it. But it won't be live. It'll be recorded the day before. But that's the only way we're going to be able to do it with freaking man until they get Starlink or something. You have internet, and then it'll work. Well, we got good signal now. We're talking to Dr. Colleen Huber. Now, Colleen worked with Dr. Frank. I got to say, yo, what's up real quick before he had to leave. But this is the topic is hazards of masks. Peer-reviewed studies confirm damage to lungs, heart, brain, immune system, kidneys, etc. Also, her recent book, The Defeat of COVID, 500-plus medical studies show what works and what doesn't. You can go check her out at ColleenHuber.com, C-O-L-L-E-E-N, two L's, two E's, Colleen Huber, H-U-B-E-R, ColleenHuber.com. Now, I got from Frank, and we've been interviewing Dr. Mikovits on the show every week for 5 years. We knew this was coming. We do our vaccine education summits. We have a lot of conversations with people. Here we freaking go. So now that we're here, we're like, well, duh, what'd you think was going to happen? Where are we at in this? And you know, Dr. Frank goes, Colleen, she's the Mikovits of Arizona. Man, you're going to get some. So I'm surprised that I haven't talked to you already. But let's talk about the hazards of masks real quick. When did that come out, and why did you write it?
Well, first, it's a high honor and a great challenge to try to live up to being the Dr. Mikovits of Arizona, but I will do my best. So the hazards of masks have actually been known for years before the so-called pandemic. And I'm calling it a so-called pandemic because in many ways it actually did not fill the criteria of a pandemic, and we can get into that if you like. But masks were studied by my research team, and we have compiled the most comprehensive research in the English language on the hazards of masks. We are aware of the damage that they are shown to do to brain, heart, lungs, kidneys, even the immune system. Now you might say, well, don't surgeons wear them, and haven't they worn them for a long time? Surgeons have also suffered from deoxygenation from wearing masks, and that has been established in the medical literature. That was known, years and years ago. But it became a custom that was hard to fight against. And you see how hard it is to fight against, as now lay people have been wearing masks for a year. And even when it's okay for them to take them off, even when Costco says, go ahead and take them off if you want, you know, there are a lot of people still wearing them. Once that gets adapted, it's kind of like Mark Changizi is from Iran. And he noted that at the time of the Iranian revolution, when women started to wear the, I'm going to mispronounce it, hijab. Anyway, they never took them off. I mean, once you start feeling shamed into wearing something extra, it kind of makes you feel naked without it. And people have learned that, it's only acceptable for me to wear a mask. So it's very hard to undo this. Fortunately, a lot of us have realized, well, masks don't do anything. We know from all medical literature prior to March 2020 that masks do nothing against viruses. They actually do nothing against viruses. And I feel I need to repeat that because people have been told the opposite by corporate media, mainstream media for so long that they no longer have any idea of what's true and what's false. But all of the medical literature showed before March 2020 that masks do nothing against viruses. And there was not even one study prior to that time that showed that masks were effective against viruses.
They're effective in giving you NPC, non-participating character look the same of I get to be in the club of virtue signal of I drive a Prius and obviously I voted for Biden. I mean, that's what it does, and that's what the security blanket thing is. And you can see it. And up here, when we were in Rapid City at this event up here, nobody wore masks. There was maybe a couple of people you went out and the ones that did, they were like 20 to 22, around early 20s, and are in groups, couples, and they were virtue signaling, we're better than the 5 billion people around us that aren't or something. I'm like, man, don't you just feel silly? And they don't. It's a psychological thing. Address that. You had to come across
that. Yes, absolutely. Well, you remember maybe it was a month or two ago when David Hogg said, well, I don't wear a mask anymore because I don't want to be mistaken for a Trump voter. Well, guess what? You know why I do not wear a mask and I refuse to wear a mask? Because I don't want to be mistaken for a fascist who would obstruct the breathing of another person, who has no respect for bodily integrity, who has no respect for the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I do not want to be mistaken for that person. So no, I do not wear a mask. I have not worn a mask once in this whole ridiculous fiasco. If Costco said, you can't come in without a mask, fine. I can live perfectly well without Costco. The airlines say you can't board without a mask, fine. I don't need to fly. Okay, I adjusted my life so that, I only dealt with and transacted with reasonable people to the greatest extent possible. And if that meant that I was driving 40 miles more to buy groceries, as if I lived in a rural area, which I don't. But anyway, so be it. I wanted to transact with, do business with reasonable people. So, yeah, I don't wear masks.
Hold on. The network just started playing something. What the heck? Contact the network, Ian, see what's going on. All of a sudden, I'm getting the news break on the network. What the hell is that about? But fortunately, we're recording here, so we got the video, and we're going to put that up anyway so they can fight it. So please continue. The mask has been it's a symbol of compliance. It's like, the Star of David or something, in Nazi Germany. But their willing participation, and a lot of it is out of fear, but a lot of it is out of, the willingness to show compliance. And that is a whole nother level of illness. There's a mental illness going on. How would you describe that?
Exactly. People say that, I wear a mask to show respect. No, actually, you're showing extreme disrespect if you wear a mask. You're showing a disrespect of bodily integrity. You are showing a disrespect of 1 Corinthians 6:19. The body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. It basically, translation, don't trash the body. And you're showing a disrespect to the U.S. Constitution. You're showing a disrespect of Universal Declaration of Human Rights if you put on a mask. So no, no masks. Absolutely. Masks should not be worn. Okay, so you ask about the mental effect, the psychological effects of wearing a mask. I think they are profound even for adults, but with every, the younger the person who is having the misfortune to deal with this COVID era, the more I think damaging it is to see adults and other kids wearing masks, to feel that one has to hide one's face in shame.
Yeah, Donna, we're looking to communicate with the network. They said that she goes, no, it was fine. I don't know what the hell he's doing. All right, well, we'll continue to show, because fortunately we have the recording here that would do the video, so don't worry about it. But they'll get the network taken care of. The one thing that I did want to emphasize this, and I wanted to make sure you got able to express yourself on this, because the psychological effect, is it already have a name? Is there already a condition for this and you're diagnosed? Or is it a new COVID mask wearing Americanus boobus of whatever syndrome? I mean, you know what? You're going to name it? You know, I mean, what are we going to call this thing?
Yeah, that is a good question. Actually, my research team, you know, after we looked at the physiological effects and the physiological damage, after we looked at the microbial damage, all the bacteria that are cultured, incubated on the face side of a mask, after we looked at the hard, tangible data, they also wanted to continue with a discussion of the psychological injury. I said, guys, I'm not as comfortable in that area. One, because I believe it's still too early to know exactly what's going on. And personally, I just don't feel that that's my forte of understanding. So we may have quite a bit more evidence years from now about that kind of damage. But, you know, we do have very hard data about what masks do in damaging a person. For example, they have been found to incubate 100,000 bacterial colonies per hour on the inside surface of the face mask. We do know that mask wearers breathe more deeply. So you take in, you bring in those bacteria, those extra bacteria deeper into the lung. Also, the gases of masks, you know, you're increasing carbon dioxide, decreasing oxygen. What does that do? Among other things, it damages the brain. The brain does not want that. But it also immobilizes cilia. Cilia, the little hair-like projections on the upper respiratory airways that escalate and get rid of the microbes that we inhale. Okay, but those have been immobilized, and now you got 100,000 bacterial colonies per hour coming in with extra inhalation because I'm desperate for oxygen in this mask.
High school kids run track with masks. Yeah. They need to be prosecuted. This is just stupid.
Oh, yes. I believe it is criminal, and it is definitely immoral to force children or anyone to wear a mask. It is fascist. It is, now some people will say, well, no, it's actually communist. Some say it's fascist. I believe where left and right go to extremes, they really resemble each other very, very much. Okay. So really, was Stalin that much different than Hitler? I don't know. Well, Hitler had his origins in National Socialism, which was actually left. So it's not surprising to me that the extreme left has adopted fascist. I'm calling it fascist because it's a dominance over the health of the person that I control, that we, the elites, control your body and will dictate to you what you have to do. They dictated that, you know, Jews had lice and must be separated from others, social distancing, lockdown, right, in the ghettos. And then they had to be deloused, okay, Zyklon B used to kill lice, allegedly, even though they didn't have lice, of course. But, you know, this was... we are going to use scary microbe to say that we must control your body. You had to have a mask. Now you're going to have a vaccine, whether you like it or not. That is completely fascist. And what the Nuremberg Code was for, what the Nuremberg trials, if we learned anything from World War II, it's like attorney Mary Holland says, if we learned anything, the medical procedures must not be forced on individuals. That goes for masks, that goes for vaccines, and that really technically goes for social distancing too. Don't tell me that I can't hug family members or friends. And I've been doing it for an entire year, by the way. I never stopped shaking hands, never stopped giving hugs, never wore a mask. It's just, I refuse to participate with their fascist nonsense. I mean, some might call it communist. I'm kind of saying whatever, extreme left, extreme right is not really, okay, I see that as one axis of one political axis. Here's the other axis, which is completely perpendicular. Authoritarianism versus liberty. Okay, I'm taking the side of liberty and I'm not ceding an inch. No, you don't get to take away any of my civil liberties. None whatsoever. So I think everybody has to take that stand, is that you're not going to bring out a scary virus story in order to remove our liberties. No, we're not going to allow it. And we have to put our foot down as citizens.
How are you successful or the battle engaged and so on in Arizona? Is there something special about Arizona? Because we were there for the holidays. You know, we left in May and we've been kind of gone and we got there. And I was kind of surprised at how compliant in the Valley of the Sun people were. So we start doing signs. We did a bunch of signs. Sign everywhere, sign, freeway overpass sign. We're doing the different groups and we're making signs and we're being butt heads. And then it got to the point that where friends were going, hey, if somebody wants the vaccine, I'll carpool them. If you're that stupid, get in, man. I'll take you down and do it. Are you going to get it? Hell no. But I think they need to get it. You know, we're going to go down and it'll be a Darwin thing. We'll cure the planet with all the dumb people who want to get vaccinated. So that's kind of a callous view, but I understand their point. You know, this is, if you're not informed, it's willful ignorance. There's something else going on. This is a psyop. This is a thing that's been, you know, exactly, conditioned. And in Arizona, I didn't anticipate it being so widespread. And I know most people are like, it's no big deal. I wear it on my chin. They make me, I put it out, whatever. And they're not, probably not as damaged by it and don't care. But some people, like my oldest daughter, she's very sensitive to this. She can't take, she's got all kinds of letters and she doesn't have to, and she'll quote the law and whatever, and they don't care. You know, now Donna and I, my wife and I, for the past, during all this thing, I probably put on a mask maybe a dozen times, not even that. I can count on two hands how many times I put it on, because I had to go into Verizon to get a new phone. I had to, do whatever. I mean, some places or, it's at somebody's retirement community, it's their deal or whatever. But go to Walmart, go to Sam's Club, go to Costco, go to Home Depot, the auto parts store, Lowe's, Harbor Freight. Never do I put a mask on. Whenever we go to a restaurant and they say, oh, you got to have a mask, we just turn around and walk out. We were in Austin one time and they chased us in the parking lot. No, it's okay, come back. I mean, so I'm just, this has been interesting for Donna and I. We just don't. And if they say anything at the door, ma'am, do you have a mask? She goes, yes. Then she just walked off. I ain't wearing it though, kind of. So it's been so successful. And the only time we flew on Southwest Airlines from Maine coming to Arizona, I think it was August or something. And on our way back is when they mandate. We were the only ones in the airport and on the plane that didn't have masks on. She said, I got exemption for, yeah, whatever. And I go, yeah, whatever she said. I got issues, And they go, yes, you do. So we go and nobody said anything. Of course, all the Karens are taking our picture and everything and send it to the home office or whatever. So a couple of weeks later when we're flying back, man, they didn't care. You will be wearing a mask and we're going to do a beat down. I'm like, so what you're saying is, yep, that's what we're saying. Okay. Then I get on and I put the mask over my eyes and went to sleep and dared them to bother me. But, the thing is that we have demonstrated just how noncompliance, you really are left alone for the most part. I guess middle-aged white chubby boys don't get seen or something. I don't know what it is. I have my white privilege, but I didn't get bothered most of the time. And if we did, we just left. In Arizona, I anticipated more people doing that. A lot did, but they didn't. Why? What happened to Arizona? Now it's starting to change, around the country, but I need to understand the psychology of what happened.
Okay, here's what I think happens. The main feature of the pandemic that is too little discussed, but is really the key of it, the most important factor, is divide and conquer. And it's no accident that critical race theory was rolled out during this last year. Okay, whites and blacks get along too well, right? I mean, we value and respect and appreciate each other as fellow citizens. And we have formed friendships, multiracial friendships. You know what? That doesn't work for divide and conquer. Okay, so you white people, you're no good. Okay, and you're supposed to, and everybody else is supposed to hate the white people. And, you know, of course it's ridiculous. It's bogus. It's utter nonsense. And it's not, it should not be taught to children. I mean, it's just a slap in the face to what Martin Luther King Jr. said, you know, judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. You know, and one of the best quotes I'd ever heard. That's what we... that's what many of us admired growing up, that kind of attitude that we will, but that doesn't work for divide and conquer. For divide and conquer, how are you going to split people up by race? But when it comes to masks, okay, here's the stories that they put in the news. Jane Doe, John Smith did not put on a mask and they turned the plane around. They had to turn the plane around and inconvenience everybody else. Okay, So the enemy is not the people who are forcing other people to obstruct their breathing, which is what it should have been, but rather the one person who insisted on the right to breathe freely. Oh, they're the enemy. They're the ones who inconvenienced you. They're the ones who made you late for your next flight because the plane had to get turned around because uncooperative person refused to put on a mask. So that kind of divide and conquer, you know, the masked versus the unmasked. And now they're trying to do it with the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Okay. I mean, they were just
no, no, of course I understand all their technique and this social pressure of whatever, but the people's compliance with it, what is that illness? You know, see, I'm for activists. I'm like, you guys want to play, you know, we'll have a campaign of, we're going to get on the plane and take it off, turn this sumbitch around. Well, you get permanently banned. Good. There's hundreds, thousands of us willing to do this. You want to play? Let's play.
Yes. Well, okay. I would like to answer your question. It's not my area of expertise, but I can speculate. You know, those of us who are going around without masks envy Florida. We envy rural areas where most people are unmasked and have been unmasked. We envy, you know, a lot of athletes we see outside doing individual sports where they're refusing to wear masks, you know. Many of us are employed by, companies that require masks and, we're going to have to, you know, wear them. And I think there has been threats of dismissal of employees for not wearing masks. And then there's also the polite mindset. Well, I just wanted to be respectful. Okay, so I'm standing in line in a supermarket, I know when it was. It was Christmas Eve. I was in a supermarket and I was standing in line. I was one of the very few in the store without a mask. The man behind me said, you know, I really admire that you're not wearing a mask, but, you know, I do it out of respect. And what I wanted to say to him is, you know, your hands carry trillions of microbes, including viruses. Out of respect, do you amputate your fingers? Okay. You know, how much do you have to damage your body to show respect to some poorly informed, ignorant idea of the human immune system and how the human immune system works with microbes? You know what I mean?
I want to share something with you. I want to share this with you. So, you know, we can talk the same language here. My experience has been is that they them those always say the T3. I mean, they them those are, you know, what are you, an anarchist? I mean, don't you? I go, look, man, I'm just against they them though. Who are they, you conspirist? You know, and I'm going, there are those that just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave you alone. That's who they them those are. Okay, so you want to know who they are? You know, it's very easy for me and the audience. We're like, they're the ones that won't leave you alone. I'm good. No, you have to. And you're like not virtue signaling enough and give me value by me being able to make you do something. And so what the bad guys do is what I've seen in 30 years of activism and all this stuff. They want to convince you of something. And if they can't convince you, then they'll try and convince you that they convinced everybody else and your neighbors and they voted, they complied. They're the crazy ones. Maybe you're not, but they are, and you need to get along, go along and that kind of stuff. And what I've seen is they play on our humanity. I don't want to lose my humanity. I don't want to get to the point to where, oh man, we put on the battle rattle and get the AR and we're going to get some, you know, and it's because once you start down that road, man, it goes until you're done. I mean, it's, you know, somebody, you go till
you're done. You put down the six pack, you get up and you go kick ass. But I've been trying to do it in a peaceful, nonviolent, convincing persuasion way with information. And all the information that you have that you want to share with someone that's wearing a mask, you know, we'll spend a lot of time doing shows, arm people with a lot of information, share this show, share this book. I got books coming out my butt. You know, we're sharing with people. We do signs and everything. We're out there sharing. What we are seemingly at a disadvantage for is our humanity, that we do have compassion for other people, that we do have empathy, that we do care. And they, them, those play on that. They go, well, if you cared about grandma and you don't want to kill her, you'd wear your mask. Well, obviously you don't care. Okay. So they play on that. Well, yeah. I think that's the vast majority of people that just, I just don't want to be perceived as not caring according to CNN. Okay. So I'm going, you know, how do you break that? Well, it takes one, people like you that has the information, then you get it out there enough and you have, you know, let me see your smile. We have a bunch of signs. It'd be Audrey Hepburn from Breakfast at Tiffany's stencil. She just smiling, you know, that beautiful smile. And it's just a sign that says, let me see your smile. Or big lips like Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, has it, let me see your smile, you know, and or masks make me feel alone, or masks make me feel silenced, or masks make me feel enslaved. This is what we do on the Love Bus. We're making these signs to make it to where, look, because you're not wearing a mask doesn't make you a bad guy. You're just informed and you're not going to be a slave. Well, these guys embrace the slavery thing. So how we're taken advantage of is that these people that wish to show this kind of compliance with the lab coat and the shiny badge of I got a backed up by a gun from the government is that they play on our humanity. They see it as a weakness. They go, this is how we're going to manipulate and control. And it works until it doesn't. And when it doesn't is when people like you, Dr. Mike Vitz and 50 gazillion other people that we've had on our vaccine education summits, we knew we started doing this and had signs up in H1N1 in 09 with the Obama administration. I saw what was coming. That's why we're on the Love Bus. Oh, hell no, that you're going to force a notion and potion, you know, from the crown with some guy, army guy running around with camouflage chasing you down and sticking you. I'm like, anybody ever heard of Nuremberg? I mean, come on. Yeah. So what happens is, as we get more and more of this information, as we are able to, when you wear a badge, you know, not mask, not vax, and ask me why, and they go, no, I don't want to ask. I already know. They flooded with the, you know, we kind of get it. When that happens and the good people are armed with information and they finally realize what they're up against and they have to put their six pack down, get off the couch, turn off the TV and go whip some ass, and go get that fly's got to die. It's been bugging them and they can't sit there and watch the game in peace. Where's that fly swatter? Okay. And they're going to get up and they go until it's over. And that is the tipping point that we're building to. That is why what you're doing is so important, because they take advantage of our good nature and our love and compassion and empathy and sympathy and our emotion. Yep. They take advantage of that. But because of that, when we are informed, and the highest expression of love of our children and grandchildren and our society and our culture and our country and our neighbors and our friends and family, when it gets to where we know we got to go, you know, screw you, you're such evil on that, we're going, that's when they're done. And they know that that's coming. So there's something else at play here. They need a little more time. They got to turn it into a Marxist social collective of whatever the industrial complex of pharma making money of on the back end of how many damaged, whatever the hell they do. And this mass thing, you know, this is just one of the mechanisms, and it creates more patients, more money for pharma. Yeah. Do you have this symptom? We got a commercial for that. You know, instead of just take off the mask, take a pill. So I'm just going, so that's what I see, is that how does that ring with you? That they're taking advantage of our good nature, but it's in our good nature where we start combining our efforts to go up against bad guys with information that you supply. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Ernest. But I have to say that I believe you did a much better job of answering your question than I did. It's just that, you know, speculating about what's going through the minds of other people, I don't specialize in that so much. However, I do think you nailed it. You know, people are compassionate. People are considerate. And what did public school train us to do, really? It trained us to be obedient. You know, it trained us to respect authority, sit in our seats, be quiet, and be obedient. Okay, so then the mask requirement comes along. How soon can I put on my mask? How many would you like me to wear? How long should I wear it? Am I breathing little enough for you now? Okay, so, I mean, that was the compliance that has been instilled into us since the public school. You know, would question authority, that wasn't exactly what was allowed. Hippies said that, question authority, no. We're teaching you to be obedient. Okay, so yes, and I think that's played out in adulthood. But, you know, it's not true adulthood. A true adult, right, it would be somebody who evaluates what is going on and makes proper decisions. But we're still waiting for daddy figure to tell us, Dr. Fauci, is it okay if I take off my mask yet? You know, and that's a little bit.
Well, you can take off one of the masks.
Yeah, right. Okay, but. You know what?
You're free.
I would dispute this idea. I do think actually time is on our side. You know, it becomes more apparent all the time that there is no pandemic. You know, 0.9% of the United States population died in 2020. 0.9% of the U.S. population died in 2019. Ditto 2018. Okay. And the amount by which deaths have been attributed to COVID is made up for by the decrease in heart disease, flu, pneumonia, COPD. Okay,
like so they cured. Yeah, but they cured pneumonia.
Yeah, cured. Right.
We don't have any more. You know, one of the first things that I did is I go, you know, if there is all this death, dying, and destruction, it will impact life insurance rates. All right, yes. It's a business. You know, they're like, hell yeah, man, we're gonna have some criteria, because I remember. During the AIDS thing, you know, that's what, you know, a lot of these tests are. You got life insurance and you're going to die from whatever and so on. No change in life insurance. That's not a factor. And there's no real numbers. They know better. You know, right. So I'm going, they're lying.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Oh, at some point, I hope you interview economist Catherine Austin Fitz, because she looks at it from that angle. She looks at the whole pandemic narrative from, wait a minute. What was happening with the insurance industry? Let's see if the beneficiaries are killed off, but the younger premium payers are still paying premiums. That's good. And also the pension fund. The pension funds got rated of, I forget how many billions of dollars, but anyway.
And it's gone.
Yeah, that's right. And it's gone. Okay. So
yeah, but they wouldn't do that. Kill all those people. They themselves wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong.
Yeah, but look how badly they failed. They ended up with a virus. They put together, you know, HIV, Hep C, SARS-1, and they tried to make the nastiest, most lethal virus they could, and they ended up with something with a 99.85% survival rate. Boom. A 0.15% infection fatality rate. Boom. Humanity has vanquished this virus. We have herd immunity. We have natural T-cell immunity, okay? We don't need no stinking vaccine, as you said, which actually has nothing of benefit in it. Okay, pardon my disrespectful language to the pharmaceutical industry that we don't need your stinking vaccine. However, it has nothing of value. It doesn't contribute anything to human health. It actually damages human health. And I actually wrote an 8-page paper about that, that because it teaches the body to keep making spike proteins, those spike proteins are damaging our internal organs. If we take the vaccine, they're even damaging the internal organs of other people who are close to the vaccinated people. Okay, but that's another whole can of worms.
No. We've covered a lot of this stuff. I'm telling you, it affects, you know, people that even go, they don't do the vaccine, they don't want to wear the mask. They go to family events, you know, and it happened to our oldest daughter. She's very health conscious and she's not playing. Well, to keep from having to wear a mask and put on her children, she drove with her husband and her two children from Phoenix to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, to go to her grandfather. My wife's father died, and our family all went. Two of the families They brought their kids and they drove just to prevent from putting the mask on the airplane. They go, no, exactly. We're driving. So when that's they did that, she gets back there. Of course, everybody's all got their back. Oh, we're, you know, Pennsylvania and we're compliant and Sieg Heil. By the end of the week, the whole family, everybody stopped wearing a mask because none of us were, and they just got over it. You know, they just felt stupid, you know, so they just stopped. But she goes back, and they're in this super vaccination virus of spike, whatever the hell, and all of a sudden her menstrual cycle changed. She goes, that never happened. She goes, man, she's like, what the hell's going on? Something impacted me because I did. And then we find out these spike proteins, they can, you know, they can shed or whatever the hell they do, you know, and it impacted her menstrual cycle. So she was upset about that. Not so much that it maybe she, you know, not have a problem. It's just that something impacted her like that from somebody else doing the vaccine and stuff. She just pissed, you know?
Yes, exactly right. You know, I have a very small clinic in the Phoenix area. And in my tiny clinic, 11 people have had reactions, secondary reactions, from being near COVID vaccinated people. By far, the majority of those 11 are postmenopausal women who have, in years after menopause, began bleeding again. That's kind of scary. Not only that, but premenopausal women who bled gushingly. I mean, just like profuse menstruation, we call it menorrhagia. And when it lasts very long, we call it metrorrhagia. Anyway, just the medical terms for that. But, I've documented that in the chart notes. We really need to start being able to report that as well to VAERS, because these secondary reactions to the vaccine are quite serious. You know, postmenopausal women are not supposed to start bleeding again. And of the 11 people, one was a man. I happened to shake hands with a person vaccinated earlier that day, and then ditto shook hands with another person vaccinated earlier that day. And then he's knocked down for 2.5 days with flu-like symptoms, can't get out of bed. He was so sick. Okay. And so, you know, we've got to start. And then another person in my clinic who, was exposed to a vaccinated person, her blood pressure spiked. Okay, she got away from the vaccinated person and, we treated her for that. And then, blood pressure came back to normal. But then she got around another vaccinated person and her blood pressure spiked again.
Okay, this has to be on purpose. Yes. I mean, this has to be planned. Yep. This had to be, this is the deal. What are we being set up for? What's going on?
I know. Exactly. I mean, it's a way to make the vaccine more lethal than it already was. Okay, as of a couple of days ago, 47% of U.S. adults aged 20 to 65 had been fully vaccinated against COVID. All right, that means 53% of us are resisting, and I like that. You know, 53% of us, a majority, have at least looked at this and at least asserted, wait a minute, no, I control what happens to my body. And or we looked at the fact that there are a lot of problems with this vaccine. And or we looked at the fact that, there have been low deaths from vaccines. And then boom, you know, there's an enormous number of deaths. So there are 5,000 deaths reported to VAERS so far in the short months that the vaccine's been out. This would have pulled any other drug off the market. But no, there's a lot of money in invested in this. So anyway, that didn't
happen. Okay, now let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah. You know, I went through this as a young man. We had our children by the late 80s. So my four kids, I got 12 grandkids and four kids. So I got my four children are from like 30 to 35, 36. There's like 4 under 4 almost. I mean, we're about the same age. And I remember in the early 90s, when it started, two things that we noticed at our church. We went to a large church, North Phoenix Baptist Church. We used to go there, you know, back when our children were small. And it's a, you know, one of those big giant mega church things. You know, they got a, a roller skating rink inside. I mean, it's one of those. You
wow.
know? So, you know, what happened was all of a sudden there was infertility problems. You know, everybody, because they separated the families, we'd have probably 60 families in our Bible study just based on the wife's age. That's how they broke us up. Well, all of a sudden you started to see that in every group, you went down to like, 6 to 10 families in a small Bible study kind of deal. And there was every group had at least one couple or more that had fertility problems. I don't remember it being that high. Then when you had children in the nurseries and so on, there's allergies everywhere. Then sudden infant death syndrome became a thing, to the point it was a thing. They're going, son, they didn't equate it to where, yeah, they just got vaccinated, got a fever and died. You know, I mean, they don't want you to know this. So as in retrospect, when we go back at the same time as when they started really pushing this well baby visit thing, whatever the hell that is, you know,
exactly.
And every time we would go, they keep pressing, what, more vaccines? Because we did our children back in the late 80s before this got really heavy. You did MMR, whatever the hell it was. We didn't know any different. But this, you know, we got 15 gazillion shots for you guys. I'm like, hell no. That's what I said. Well, baby, because whenever they say something, it's usually the opposite, you know. So I just I go, no, we're done. Well, our children, you know, are a lot healthier. I mean, we all have I take some zinc. I mean, you know, some vitamin D. When all this started, we took it seriously, and I got an oxygen generator and an oxygen sensor because I knew it was an oxygen thing. I'm going to put you in the hospital. They're going to ventilate you or give you more. I said, I'll take care of it myself. So if it gets to that point, I don't want to go because that's where sick people go to die. And I said, you know, we'll take care of it. But the one thing that we did do after talking to a bunch of doctors and everything, a little antiviral chaga mushroom. I just been doing that regularly, you know, just to kind of stop the replication of and so on. So I just like it. So it's not like I'm totally ignoring it. It's just I don't believe a freaking thing these guys say because they always want to get you on the back end. They want you sick. They want you to have symptoms. Yeah. And if you don't even know you got the symptom or I'm thinking about, they remind you on cable news of got this symptom. Well, we got a drug for you. So it seems to me that they have overextended themselves so much and they got such slim margins that they need to make more sick people or they go out of business. You know, it's like you cut 5% of sales on Walmart or Amazon, they freaking go bankrupt. I mean, you know, so the people, because of doctors like you and Dr. Frank that were, you know, treating the whole patient that started we're here to keep you well, not to make you sick so we can get money in the back end of a pill, you know, that you do that. That has been getting more and more popular. People are leaving the medical community as an apothecary or however you call it and going to more natural. And I remember my daughter, she had her first child a decade ago, and she had like 23 plus units of blood or uterus ripped. And that just caused a cascade of all kinds of crap she got. Well, we've been dealing with that, and Dr. Mikovits helped her a great deal. And she's getting better, but it's like, get this crap away from me. And I can see in the blood supply, which is what Dr. Mikovits was warning of, exactly what happened to her with 20-something units of blood. You know, you got what everybody had, you know. So all of this has impacted our family. We can see it. And the drive towards health care instead of this symptom alleviation thing and your industry and the laws in Arizona that you have like this double, you know, health system in Arizona. Now they want to combine you, put you under the medical board of the governor of we rule everybody. We were letting you be out there and be free a little bit. And now wait, you're cutting into our money. You know, you're keeping people healthy. We can't have that. You know, who makes money on that? You know, so tell me about that. You know, in Arizona, a lot of people will come to Arizona for these treatments. You know, they go for that freedom. It's like Arizona, and then I can't do that. Crap, I'll go to Mexico or India or whatever. They're got resources. They're going to go somewhere to get the health care they need. So I'm wondering your industry and how you guys operate naturopathic in Arizona. You know, give me some trends. You know, the education of the people, them shifting over, what kind of attack you're feeling from the government and the pharmaceutical and healthcare industry. Talk about that a little bit. What's your experience in your field?
Okay. Well, as you said, infertility is way up. Since these vaccines were rolled out, 2,000% increase in miscarriages is happening. That was according to Byron Bridal of the of Pfizer, who was one of the Pfizer research scientists who developed the mRNA vaccine. 2,000% increase in miscarriages is that's extremely concerning, and that should put a stop to these vaccines right there. But as you also basically are saying, is that the pharmaceutical industry has noticed that there is no money in healthy people. There is no money in dead people. Where's the money? In between. Keep them chronically ill. They'll be paying all these massive insurance premiums. They'll be consuming all these drugs. That's where they want us. Okay. Now, who stands against that? Oh, chiropractors, acupuncturists, herbalists, naturopathic physicians. Is it any coincidence you won't hear any of those four terms on mainstream media? Will mainstream media ever utter the word chiropractic or naturopathic? I don't think so, because we actually, you know, have a way to break free of that cycle, break free of the vicious cycle of, feel sick, take a drug, feel more sick, take another drug to overcome that sickness. That's a vicious, ugly cycle that people have gotten themselves into because they watch mainstream media and say, oh, I got a symptom. I guess I'll take a drug. Now I feel worse. You know, and it keeps going on for the decades of their lives. What do? We come in, we break that cycle. We say, here's what's happening in your body. Here's a way to overcome that. We're going to taper you down from some of these toxic drugs. And we're going to taper in some nutrients. Person gradually feels better. Person gradually says, wait a minute, I didn't need those drugs in the first place. Okay. And like your family, you put aside for me. You said, I don't need that kind of lifestyle where I'm constantly making myself chronically sick in order to ensure that they have their business model intact. No, I don't live for the purpose of ensuring their business model. Okay. So then what happens with the naturopathic medical board? Well, humans in power are corruptible, as you know. And I mean, it's just a basic fact of human nature. Yeah, we got those good points that you mentioned earlier, compassion and consideration and all that. Unfortunately, there's also the corruptible aspect. Now, the current composition of the naturopathic medical board is the most stinking pile of corrupt crooks that I have seen. Why? In my personal case, they've spent three straight years going after me, trying to get me for this, that, and they can't. They have to dismiss it because there's nothing against me. Why? No patient has ever filed a complaint against me. No family member of a patient has ever filed a complaint against me. Why? Because we do our best to get people well. They appreciate that. Okay. We didn't harm anybody. 14 years of practicing medicine, no complaints of patient harm, right? Okay. So, but the board doesn't like it because I'm still, you know, I'm giving people an alternative to chemotherapy for the cancer. Ooh, we can't have that because chemotherapy brings a massive money. You're getting them well with just nutrients. Can't have that. So what are they doing? Now they're trying to go after me for chart notes. They're saying, okay, so your chart notes are illegible. I said, well, no patient has ever had a problem with the legibility of my chart notes, okay? And the board never alleged that before, but now—
Okay, wait. So yeah. You're telling me that a board of doctors are going after a doctor because they write like a doctor? That means there's a doc. You do doctor writing? You're not allowed?
No. Hold on.
Finally, yay!
I print all my chart notes. They're completely legible. I have such clear handwriting that here's some of my handwriting. I don't know if you can see it, but here's some of the mechanisms.
That's a hell of a lot better than anybody other doctor I've ever saw.
And those were just—
I want a comparison. I want them to prosecute you and go after you for your doctor writing and compare with theirs. I'm like, that's
right.
Awesome. Bring it on, girl. Go at them, man. I want to get some.
That's right. Bring it on, baby. That's my attitude. Okay? They want to come after me for that because they have nothing else. Bring it on. It will just expose further their corruption. You know, it's really ridiculous what they're trying to get away with. And here was another complaint. They said, oh, well, you must turn in your chart notes. Okay, so I'm erasing patient names, redacting. So I only give the chart note without violating my contract with the patient to protect their privacy, right? Okay, so I'm getting rid of the names and date of birth and the address and all this and just putting the basic medical stuff out there. At one point, I wrote, you know, we have SOAP notes, subjective, objective assessment, and plan. It's just a way of organizing our thoughts during the patient consult. Okay, and the assessment, that is my ideas of what's going on. I was so pleased with the improvement in a patient that all I wrote under that section was, yay, exclamation point, progress, exclamation point. They complained about me for that. The board does not like that I wrote, yay, progress at one point. Do they care that a patient is improving in their health? No, they were upset about that. Meanwhile, that same day, a patient really had received damage from a different clinic and they just dismissed that. I mean, the patient was actually pushed to the point of even going unconscious in a particular procedure at a different clinic, but the board just dismissed that out of hand. Then they get to me, they say, how dare you write yay progress? Excuse me, guys, but you should be pleased that the patient got.
No, they don't give a crap. You know, so who is it? I remember going through this with Dr. Frank, is that when they were trying to bring in naturopaths under the control of the, you know, state governor medical board of whatever the hell, you know, and then, of course, you know, you can get insurance or you be part of Obamacare or you can have covered different things. And then a lot of the naturopaths, woohoo, we're going to be like them and we get, you know, make some money and we'll do that. And Dr. Frank was like, oh, hell no, this is the dumb man. Don't be doing that. Well, of course, you could see what was coming. The writing was on the wall. Then at the naturopath college of the school, you know, then it was like, yeah, you can get some funding and federal whatever as long as all the staff and student, everybody gets a vaccine. I'm going, really? You know, this you're under attack at a fundamental level. What makes you different is what they're going after. So these people that now that you're under, you know, was this board that's going after you? Did they exist for you before? Or is this a new supervision over you or what?
Yeah, actually, I mean, even only 5 or 10 years ago, I think the board members were far more honest and they were more interested in fulfilling their mission. Their mission is to protect the public. But what their mission is right now, they're acting as if it's the opposite. I'm telling you, I feel that they are the biggest steaming pile of corrupt excrement of crooks. I can't say enough bad things about them because they don't care about patient well-being. If patients keep getting well, they want to attack the doctor. They also have developed corporate affiliations that are illegal, that are a violation of federal law. I mean, I can't express to you my disgust with the naturopathic board for trying to go after the doctors that are working hardest.
Okay, no, wait. Let's clear this up.
Okay.
The naturopathic board is its own board, or is it become more subservient to, you know, the AMA or the medical boards, or are they separate? Have they combined? Are they going to combine? You know, and if, have they attacked the board by inserting, you know, certain people and ideologies in there? You know, give me this transition of how you're regulated or managed or whatever, and the evolution of that. You know, spend some time on that.
Well, I think their affiliations are behind closed doors, secret handshake under the table. I mean, just basically sleazy, corrupt stuff that is completely a violation of federal antitrust law and specifically the Sherman Antitrust Act, which provides for millions of dollars in fines and 5 years in prison for government officials who are guilty of it. Okay, so they are like walking this fine line where they're trying to carry out their corporate affiliations with big, you know, pharmaceutical entities and local massive hospitals, but they don't want to admit it. In fact, I know of one board member who, you know, testified before the board that, oh, no, I don't have the corporate affiliations, when we have the witnesses and the evidence that, yes, he does have the corporate affiliations. And I'm not the only one with those witnesses and the evidence. There are other people that know of this. And, you know, so he totally lied to the board and he is a board member. All right. But, you know, we have basically. Okay. So I'm not aware of what you're talking about is overt control of the naturopathic board by the pharmaceutical industry. I'm only aware of the covert influence.
Okay. I understand. No, go ahead and listen to the question. And you'll see what I mean. Before naturopathics came a separate ability in Arizona, which whenever the heck that happened, and it's been a long time, and it was different than a lot of other states. Naturopaths have the ability to write prescriptions. They can do some minor surgeries. They're doctors, but they're not the same as an MD. You know, they're an ND, you know, or whatever, naturopathic doctor. So when you came online, there was probably some kind of a supervision of board of something. And then the medical community, you know, the other doctors, I'm going to the hospital and Dr. Fred of, you know, pediatric to somebody, you know, they're under and supervised by a different board, true or false?
Yes, true. That is a different board. Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Now, this is my question. It seems to me that the governor's office and legislation recently are trying to combine the two.
There was a push for that a couple of years ago. I believe at that time it fell through, but I'm not the one to ask about that. I haven't kept up on, you know, recent developments in that area, because I think there was that push and then it ended up not happening. However, I mean, there might be something new going on that I'm not aware of.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that whether it happened or not, the desire was there. And if they didn't and the threat of that, and they're going, well, we can do it this way, or we get our friend Fred here is going to be on your board and he'll explain it to you in pharma, you know? So when the fact that they even went into the naturopathic school and under certain financial conditions, they coerced them into staff, faculty, and students taking vaccines, what the hell else did you need to know?
Exactly. That's why I say it's covert. I believe it's covert and not overt. Okay.
That's pretty overt. I don't know what your definition of covert is, but that's pretty overt to me.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But it's not on the books, as far as I know. It's just basically corrupted financial influence. Okay. That is trying to destroy naturopathic medicine and our goal of, you know, first do no harm and serve the public first. You know, my patients are my first allegiance. Okay. I don't, my allegiance is not to some bureaucrat who says, oh, I don't want you to write yay progress when the person has good results. You know, my allegiance is the patient, and the purpose of my writing those chart notes is for the patient's use. I very often.
Okay, first off, how do they get? Okay, this is what the complaint is, what they're concerned about. Yeah. You treating a patient in there, you see progress. You did whatever. You had them lick the right rock incantation of who gives a crap. Okay, they're getting better, and you're going, okay, we did this treatment of whatever. They're better. Progress. Patient's happy. You're happy. Somehow
the
they get to your,
yeah,
exactly. So somehow they get access to your chart. So that's the first thing I want to know about. And then they're that you made them better. And I'm going, what the hell is going on? So, you know, explain that to me. One, how did they even get access to your charts with no complaint from anybody?
Okay. Well, like I said, I redacted out the patient's name, address, date of birth, phone number, all the personal information, and basically wrote, you know, he had a heart attack in 1993. He started feeling digestive upset in 2012. Okay, you know, that kind of thing. Nobody knows who that refers to. Okay, so that's the part.
So this was in a paper or a book or something, right?
Oh, yeah. They demanded hundreds of pages. Hundreds of pages, but I had to redact everything to get rid of patient private information, because that's none of their business. My contract with the patient is I will protect your privacy to the best of my ability. Yet the board demanded this. You know, when the board subpoenas stuff, you can't exactly say, oh, I'm going to thumb my nose at your subpoena. Not precisely. However, I do honor my contract with my patients. I do not divulge private information, because that's my contract with them. Like I say, my first allegiance is to the patient, not to some idiot.
Okay, no, let me get this clear. So they go, you write this paper, book, whatever, and you're putting this thing, here we can get her now. All right, we want to see your patient files. Okay,
yes.
Now, did you have to give the unredacted version of that to them?
No, I refused to. They might have wanted me to.
So in you fact, redacted everything. You go, fine, here's my charts, and you can bitch about my handwriting all you want, but you ain't seeing none of the handwriting on who it is.
That's precisely correct.
Okay. Now, did they challenge you on not providing the patient information?
Not overtly. They basically said, oh, she doesn't get what we want. Yeah. No,
I don't know what you want. You want to smear and make her stop and shut you up. That's what they want.
Precisely. And they'd like to, what they were actually advocating is that I produce fraudulent information in the charts, and I refuse to do that. And on the basis of the First Amendment, I will not put fraudulent information in charts. How do I know that they want fraudulent information? They forced me to take their online course, and their online course said, well, you can pad your charts by pretending that the labs, the blood labs that occurred last week, actually occurred today. And oh, look, you have nice long chart notes. Okay. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pretend that the blood lab that happened last week happened today. No,
okay,
they happened last
week. Wait. I want to drill down on this a little bit. So when they do this, how long ago was this that they're wanting these, they wanted the charts?
The board's targeted harassment of me over three consecutive years. has been going on since, you know, 3 years ago. Okay, but the latest thing is, okay, we need to see all your chart notes. And, you know, that has been going on since about August of last year. So August of 2020. Okay, so, or thereabouts, a little after, but they've dragged it on most of a year, you know, basically because they're looking for something. They want some dirt, and they can't find any dirt because, you know, none of my patients or the family members said she harmed somebody.
Okay, Wait. This is August of 2020, and since like 18 or 19 or whatever, they've been on your butt. And so this seems like it's probably not just you, but any and everybody like you, you know, somebody that would challenge.
Yeah, I would guess. Yeah. In fact, here's the thing. They have to justify their existence. There used to be a fair number of the DUIs that they would get to hear cases of. And with the DUIs, they would slap them on the wrist, say, go and sin no more, you know, even though that was actually putting people's lives at risk. I mean, to protect the public, they actually should have said a little bit more than that, but they didn't. Okay. So they don't have that much to do anymore. So guess what happened with all four cases that I heard in their January 2021 meeting is that all four of us were told, okay, go take this course that our corporate affiliate is charging you for on chart notes. Okay. In other words, there was
Whoa, man. You keep putting in new stuff.
Yeah.
Four of us. Who's four of us?
Four different naturopathic physicians all called before the board on this matter or that matter. All, you know, silly, bogus stuff. But, okay, you have to take 4 hours of chart note course. You have to take 4 hours. You have to take 8 hours of the chart note course, you know, and because they had nothing else. They don't have any DUIs against us.
Wait a minute. I'm always asking the questions about stuff.
Yeah.
The four of you that were done, what other than being naturopaths, what was the commonality that they picked you for?
That, frankly, I do not know. I did not dig into their cases, but I do know that what the board complaint was we don't like your chart notes. Okay, now that is...
Are they checking everybody's chart notes?
Yeah, because they subpoena them.
No, I mean, everybody? I mean, all naturopathics get their chart notes subpoenaed?
No, it's only
Did they get subpoenaed when they, you know, I would imagine they get a complaint. You don't have a complaint, so why were they subpoenaing your chart notes?
They subpoena whoever they don't like. The board has written into their own abilities, we can go after anybody we like. They wrote that into the rules. It used to be they would not bother you unless there was a patient complaint. Now they will go after you.
So they didn't have to go through the process of sending in some shill to be a patient and so they can bitch. I mean, you don't even have to do that. They just
want your
chart notes because we want to.
Oh, but they've done that too. There have been spies.
This is not good. I vote not good on this.
It's not good at all.
This is fundamental corruption. Using government shiny badges and authorities and the legislature because we can.
Precisely. That's right.
Wow. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. Because the network had problems, whatever the hell their deal is, I want to package this show and have it repeated on the network. Okay. So what I'm going to do, if you can go another 20 minutes, I can package a 2-hour thing and have them do it. I'm going to move over here and we'll just keep going for a little bit if you got time.
Here's a problem. I got to go to work. So can we possibly meet and talk another day? And remember, we were coming on for my book. Here's a photo of it. Oops, too much glare, right?
There you go.
Okay. Anyway.
Well, tell us about your book real quick before you go. Give out the web page to make sure we got that in because everybody's going to yell at me if we don't put it up there. And then we have the archive. Donna's got all your information by the book and links and all that stuff. So, all right, give me a, you know, we already love her. Do we love her? Yeah, we're already in. Oh, we got a new Dr. Colleen, man. She's on the team. So go ahead and pip out your book and everything before you go. Would you please?
Yes. Okay. This book may sound a little bit boring because it cites over 500 medical studies, but here's was the purpose of that. I actually wrote it for lay people because lay people can understand scientific studies. You know, basically what I do is I summarize what happened. Here's what did not work against COVID. Lockdowns, social distancing and masks. Those three things did not work, and I proved that they did not work. And the proof is incontrovertible. It's irrefutable proof. Okay, we have proof from all over the world. They did not work. We have a lot of proof from right here in the United States that they did not work. Okay, now, what did work against COVID? There are five things that work extremely well against COVID, and they are in this order, I believe. Vitamin D, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and zinc, and vitamin C. Okay, and those work very, very well against COVID in the creeping order, I think. So, I mean, I could talk to you for a long time about ivermectin alone, but I think we should do that a different time if it's okay with you, since I got to go to work. So that's what I wrote about.
Webpage.
Well, I just wrote about it on Substack. I'm on Gab. Gab at Dr. Colleen Huber, NMD. And on Substack, I just wrote an article about it yesterday, colleenhuber.substack.com.
So are these articles on your site?
You mean, Here, the scientific articles are on pdmj.org. That's Primary Doctor Medical Journal, pdmj.org. That's what the scientific articles are. But the book that I wrote this book in order to empower people that they will not be so terribly defeated that they will not have to give up their livelihoods, their children's education, okay? Their, you know, everything that's valuable in their lives, their right to breathe, their precious breath. They will not have to give that up in future pandemics, because here is how the human immune system works. And the basic, the ordinary person can understand it. I explain it in clear terms. I got a glossary at the end of what's a T cell? What's a B cell? What's an antibody? How does an antibody
work? Thank you. I got to have Kent Heckenlively dissect and translate Dr. Mikovits for me. Okay, so the co-author. Go ahead and hold up the book again. Okay.
I'm the author, but of the scientific studies. Boris Borovoy was lead researcher, and so was Marie Grisler, also was involved in most of the studies. That's an epidemiologist and microbiologist. And yeah, we did the studies on masks. The rest of the book I wrote myself.
Okay, the defeat of COVID is the title of the book. The defeat, you got to say it when you hold it up, man, for people to listen, they got to know what's up. Okay, the defeat of COVID, all right?
Yeah, now, it's on Barnes & Noble and Amazon.
Dr. Colleen Huber, NMD, I'm telling you, we found another treasure. We're going to be doing some more in the future with Dr. Colley. Thanks for coming on. This is fascinating. We're going to be back in Arizona this fall, and we got a couple of trips to do, but certainly 22. Man, we are freaking Arizona IA. Focus on, and then we're going to make you part of, and our summits that we do and the things. I feel another speaker at Vaccine Education Summit. We had, you know, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, Dr. Mikovits, Del Bigtree, James Lyons Weiler, Dr. Palmer. I mean, you know, when we do it up, we're going to add you to the list. Okay?
So we go. I'm honored to be in the company of those scientists. I'd be honored to be among them. Yes.
Absolutely, man. I'm in, and along with the, I think a lot of times you're so close to what's going on that you may not see it the way we do. This is a concentrated, directed effort to find and or do anything to stop healthy people and their advocates in the medical field, because they don't make money on them. These are sociopathic, you know, evil, freaking horn wearing, you know, blood dripping, fang pointy tail people. I mean, you know, this is what it's a good evil thing. These people don't have empathy. They see a market. They come in with this mindset and the ability to not care. They are just bad, evil people. We didn't know how to categorize. It was Dr. Tamburi that helped me years ago with a sociopath next door. These people are wired. I go, something wrong with them. He goes, yeah, they're sociopaths. Yeah. What the hell does that mean? You know, now all 30 years of activism, and I go, oh, that's what was wrong with these people.
Yes.
Don't think the way we do. I'm going, right. It's easy to out them because you see all the dead relationships, dead bodies in their wake, because they don't care. Well, they are the ones that are going after people like Dr. Huber. And we're going to get to Arizona. We're at least going to out Arizona, because I know how to do that. We're going to have us some fun. Dr. Huber, thank you very much. The Calvary be a-coming.
Thank you, Ernest. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.